So one day his dad tells him to go out and he says, go find your brothers. And he does. And he's conveying the message and his brothers see him coming. And they plot against him. And so they grab him and they throw him in this hole. And at first they're going to kill him. And then they have a change of heart and they said, you know what, let's sell him into slavery. They saw this caravan coming by. So they sell him into slavery. They take this coat, this robe, and they tear it up as though an animal attacked him and dipped it in blood, and they took it back and they tell their dad that he had been killed by a wild animal. Of course, the dad, Jacob, he was devastated. His favorite son, Joseph, killed. His brothers, doesn't tell us, but they went on with life. They went back to tending the sheep. They went back to being, you know, day-to-day life like they'd always done. I always wondered if they had maybe even forgotten about him. But that slave traders, they took him into Egypt and they sold him to the head of the guard. And the head of the guard recognized in Joseph that he had some skills, and so he put him in charge, and everything that Joseph touched just was turned to gold. I mean, he organized his home, everything was efficient, it was prosperous. And the Bible tells us that Joseph was growing into being a very handsome young man. And this guy's wife kind of took a liking to him, and which was probably common back then to take one of your slaves and make them your concubine. And men did it all the time, and assuming the women did too, she wanted Joseph to be with her. And being the upright guy he was, he said, no. Your husband has put me in charge of everything. He has trusted me with everything. That includes you, and I will not sleep with you. And as a scorned woman might do, she turned on him and created a story that Joseph had thrown himself on her and that she had had to defend him, herself. And so he was thrown into prison. Unfairly punished, he wallowed in the squalor of an Egyptian prison. And he still remained faithful to God. And one day the Pharaoh had these two guys that were kind of in the inner circle that had done some things to tick him off. So he had thrown him into the same prison where Joseph was at. And they both had these dreams. And Joseph interpreted the dreams because he was used to having dreams and understanding what they meant. And of course, being in communication with God, he was able to go to God and say, What are you telling these people? And he broke the news to one. He said, you're going to die. In a few days, the king's going to call you up and he's going to have you beheaded. And sure enough, that's exactly what happened. And to the other one, he said, you're going to actually be called back to Pharaoh and he's going to reappoint you in your position. And when you do that, remember me. And of course, the guy said, sure, I'll remember you. And sure enough, Pharaoh called this other man back and put him back into his place and position of power and authority and position that gave him the ear of the king and no mention of Joseph. No, at least not that first week or first month or first year. But 2 years later, Pharaoh had a dream. And he brought in all of his wise men and he brought in all of these soothsayers and those who were able to look at the stars and interpret things and said, here's what's happening. And he had this strange dream about skinny cows eating fat cows and skinny stalks of corn and grain eating fat grain. And he's like, what's it mean? And no one could interpret it. Until this cupbearer, this guy who's hanging around the king, he says, you know, I just remembered. There was this guy, and I had a dream, and he was able to interpret it. Of course, the Pharaoh was very excited. He said, whatever, bring this guy before me. Whatever he can do, I will give him up to half of my kingdom. He can have everything. He'll be second in charge. Next to me, he will have it all. So they go to the prison, they drag him up. Joseph very boldly tells him, he says, you have received a message from my God, the God, and here's what's going to happen. And he explained to him that there was going to be 7 years of unbelievable bounty, followed by 7 years of famine. So he said, this is what I want you to do. Joseph, you go out and you prepare a plan. And you build as many storehouses as you can, and you take all of the extra grain, all the extra food that we have for the next 7 years, and you store it. And Joseph did that, and Joseph came up with an awesome plan of distributing it, so much so that the word got out. Because when the famine hit, it wasn't just Egypt. It was all across the known world. And way back in Canaan, all these years later, his brothers ran out of food. And Jacob sent the boys down. And of course, who did they have to see? Joseph. Now, they didn't realize it was Joseph, and Joseph didn't tell them at first it was. And Joseph tells them, go back and get your little brother. I want to see him. And so they did, and Joseph does this thing where he puts the silver back in their purses, and when they get back, not only did they have the grain that they bought, but they had the money that they had given for it with them. And they were embarrassed because they thought, oh no, he probably thinks we stole the silver back. But they ran out of that food, and Jacob said, you got to go back. He said, here's what you do. Take all the money, take another double portion of the money, apologize, tell them what happened. And they said, if we don't take Benjamin, that's the little brother, we don't get any food. And so they did, and Joseph saw his younger brother, and he wept in silence. And he played another trick on them because he wanted to see if they had changed their hearts. And so he put one of his cups in Benjamin's bag and let him get out of town a few miles, and then had his guards go. And the guard said, one of you has stolen a cup. And if you have, you will be killed. And of course, all the brothers are like, oh, we didn't steal anything. And if they did, that person will be killed. We'll agree to that. And of course, they found it in Benjamin's bag, and all the brothers wept and tore their clothes, and they begged to be taken back to Joseph. And Joseph said to them, will you take their place? He asked them that. And they begged him. They said, please. And Joseph couldn't take any more because he realized their hearts had changed. And he revealed himself. And he said, bring your dad back. Bring your whole family. God has made a way to save us because of what you did. Now, the whole family eventually did move from Canaan down to Egypt. And then one day, Jacob died. Their dad died. And that's where we pick the story up. If you have your Bible, turn with me to Genesis chapter 50, verse 15. And this is some years later, 20, 25 years after they had put him in that hole and sold him into slavery. But they knew some grudges just don't go away. So their brothers were in fear. Verse 15, when Joseph's brothers saw that their father was dead, they said, what if Joseph holds a grudge against us and pays us back for all the wrongs we did to him? So they sent word to Joseph saying, your father left these instructions before he died. This is what you are to say to Joseph. I ask you to forgive your brothers the sins and the wrongs that they committed in treating you so badly. Now please forgive the sins of the servants of God, your father. And when their message came, Joseph wept. Verse 18, his brothers then came and threw themselves down before him. We are your slaves, they said. But Joseph said to them, don't be afraid. Am I in the place of God? In verse 20, is so, so important. You intended to harm me, but God intended it for good. To accomplish what is now being done, the saving of many lives. Verse 21, so then, don't be afraid. Now guys, we have been talking about Genesis for the last few weeks, and we started with creation. And how that God the Father created this garden and created perfection, and how sin entered in and man fell and there was problems and there were consequences to that. And how from the very beginning God started a plan that would one day lead to the cross. And we talked about how that in the curse of sin, God laid out a promise and said to Eve, you will give birth to a seed, a person somewhere down the line out of your heritage. There will be a person who will make a way to stand up against Satan and against evil. And later, he promised this to Abraham. He took him out and he showed him the stars. And this was a man who had no children. And he said, one day, nations will be as numerous as these stars because of you. And out of all of those, there will be this one. And he's going to be special. He will be a Messiah. And he had Isaac. And Isaac had Jacob. And Jacob had Joseph. And Joseph brought his family into Egypt. And God manipulated kings and kingdoms and weather and food cycles, all of it, because he has a plan. Guys, this is the good news for us. There is nothing new in the New Testament that wasn't there in the Old Testament. God has always been in charge. God has always had a plan, and there has always been provision. Even when God issues judgment, as we watched in the form of the flood, he made a provision. He taught a man named Noah how to build an ark and put all the animals, and he saved 8 people and the animals of this world, and he repopulated it after he destroyed it because of the sin. When Abraham took Isaac up to the mountain because God had told him to sacrifice him, God made a provision, and a ram was caught, and the angel appeared, and he says, no, in your son's place, use the ram. When we think that slavery and imprisonment is the worst thing that could possibly happen to us, when you move from immaturity, as we witnessed last week at age 17, to maturity at somewhere around age 30, and some time alone with God in a dark cell, you see a man not welcoming the bowing, not welcoming the worship, but putting it in its place, saying, do not free. I'm not God. I'm just the way that I was used by God to mechanism to save you. There's a lot of things in this world things that set us back that we see as bad and evil. And it is. But the good news is that it is not above God and it is not out of God's control. And he will use it to his glory and to our perfection. And he will manipulate nations and economies and the weather to bring you good. And when we're going through it, it doesn't feel like it. When we're going through it, it's the worst thing ever. There are pains in this room right here today. There are famines in people's lives. The question is, will we trust God? Will we trust Him enough that even in those dark times, that He knows what He's doing? March 25th, 1997. 3 weeks after I got married, I was living in Bloomington, Indiana at the time. Amy was still in Evansville. We hadn't decided where we were going to end up living. Don't recommend marriage starting off that way, by the way. One o'clock in the morning, I heard a knock on my door and didn't know, I wasn't expecting anybody at 1 a.m. and went to the door and opened the door, and there stood my mom and my wife and one of my mom's friends. I'm thinking, okay. So come on in. What's going on? I could tell immediately by looking at my wife and by looking at my mom and looking at all three women, eyes puffy, eyes red, not just because it was late in the evening, but they had bad news. My mom looked at me and said, "Your dad's gone." I said, "Gone where?" She said, "Your dad made the decision today that he couldn't take it any longer, and he decided to take his own life today." That's pain. And I'm 17 years removed from it, and I still don't completely understand it. But here's some things that took place shortly after that. At his funeral, I had the opportunity to stand up. My dad worked many of his years as some type of carpenter. And I got to share how, while I watched my dad be a carpenter, I watched him model a carpenter that had lived 2,000 years ago. And I got to share the gospel with people because in my office, they looked at me and they said, "How are you functioning? How are you able to come to work? How are you still breathing, standing up? I don't understand this." And I shared with them it was the strength in my relationship with Jesus Christ. And I have been able to share this story time and time and time again. And it has motivated me because I know that there's pain in this world. And that people, they go through a famine. But Jesus Christ came. Jesus Christ said, "I will take whatever pain you have, and I will make it not just better, I will make it beautiful." And as we head into Easter, we're going to be talking about celebrating the brutal death of a man on a cross. The very thing that Romans used to inflict fear on millions of people, in one day, a man took it away from them. And no longer does that image mean fear. But we have two of them here on our stage. Why? To intimidate you? No, to inspire you. See, that's what Jesus Christ does. That's the message of Genesis. The message is this. There are things, the biggest problem in the world, sin. The pain and suffering it causes. As Joseph said, what you intended for evil, God will use for good. But how does that happen? The very first thing is, you have to come to the end of yourself. See, Joseph, early in his life, he had the vision, but he had to get over himself. And it took slavery and imprisonment to do it. For some of you, maybe that's what it took. For some of us, it took heartbreak. For some of us, it took the death of a loved one. It took pain that in no other way could be handled other than through the perspective of the cross. But here's what has to happen today. At 3:00, we're going to have baptism. I mentioned that earlier. Baptism is an outward expression of an inward decision, and that inward decision is this. I am not capable of getting to heaven. The Bible tells us all have sinned. All of us have missed the mark. You shoot for perfection, but you're never going to get to it. But it also tells us that He gives us the free gift of grace. And that if we believe it in our heart and confess it with our mouth, then we will be saved. We will move from death into life. He will take pain and make it beauty. Maybe today you've never made that decision. I know there's all kinds of reasons why you wouldn't make that decision. Maybe there's science. And we talked about that in the first 2 weeks of Genesis, about how that the galaxies were made. And really in 6 days? Yeah, I serve a God that can do that. And I want to serve a God who can do that because He's the same God who then can take me from death and move me to life. And take all of my problems and put them away and turn them into beauty. I want to serve a powerful God. He didn't have to wait around for atoms to maybe collide into each other. He put them there. And He can put you right too. So I'm making an appeal today, and we're going to do something we haven't done here, and we're going to do an altar call in just a moment. An altar call is this. It means I'm going to invite people, if you want to make a decision, to come down today and talk. To say and identify, yes, I realize that I cannot do it on my own. I am incapable of making my pain into beauty, to making myself go from death into life. I have to have Jesus Christ. If I'm ever going to have a relationship with God, it has to be through the cross and through Jesus Christ. The second group of people that I want to talk to today, and I'm going to invite to come down. Are those of us who have had some pain, some wounds, some famine, and we're hanging on to it too, still. And I'm going to invite you to come down, and I want to pray with you, and I want you to be able to turn that over to Christ, like really turn it over to Him. Not just let Him borrow it, but let Him have it. Because you know how I'm able to go day by day and stand here today and proclaim to you that this book is still true? It's because I had to take that pain that I got 17 years ago and I had to lay it at a cross. And I had to say, Christ, I don't understand it and I don't agree with it and I really wish there had been another way. But this is how you've laid it out, and you've allowed this to happen. And I start to get a little fired up, and I'm like, God, what I won't do is let Satan use it. I'm not going to let him own it, because he'll take it. And he'll use it like a hot iron to put right inside your heart. Every time you start to think about doing something good, every time you think that life's going right, he'll sear you with it. He'll poke you with it. Ephesians chapter 6 says he shoots us with fiery darts, and we give him the ammunition. Because we don't have the courage to take the pain and the hurt and the sin that we have in our life, to lay it at the cross and say, Christ, this belongs to you. Satan, you can't touch it. Because when he comes around with it now, I go, go see the man over there. You want to mess with that stuff? He's got it. He's handling that for me. And where's Satan doing do? He's going to walk away. Because he has no authority, no power over Jesus Christ. So right now I'm going to ask the praise band to come up, and they're going to play some music. And I have not asked them to do this, but I think it's appropriate. I'm going to ask the elders to come up front too. If you're one of the elders, guys, it's not anything my position. These men and women who are standing up here that are one of the elders, they're able to pray with you as well. And so right now, what I want to do is ask you, if you want to accept Jesus Christ, today's the day. We could schedule you in. We could fit you in this afternoon and have baptism. What an awesome time to do that. And secondly, if you've got some pain, you got some hurt, you have loved ones that have pain and hurt, bring them to the cross today. Bring it up here and let's pray.